Mary King, welcome to KABU.
Thanks a lot, Bill. I'm glad to be here.
Mary King was for many years the chair of Portland State University's Economics Department. She served and still serves on the Portland Jobs with Justice Workers' Rights Board. She's written a great deal, recently retired from teaching, but not from working with progressive organizations and doing progressive research. I read her most recent work, The Impact on Oregonians of the Rise of Irregular Scheduling. Reading the report and looking at the numbers, as well as the testimony and lives of irregular workers, regular people doing irregular work, I began thinking this irregular scheduling and work is virtual slavery. Being always on call, paid maybe a subsistence wage, rarely a full day's work, some weeks very little, and subject to firing at any time for any reason at all, or no reason. Mary King, tell us about irregular work in Oregon around the country and how it impacts the workers and their families.
I'd be glad to, Bill. Thanks a lot. Let me just mention that, yes, the recent study that I just worked on was a collaborative effort with Rahi Reddy and Ellen Scott, both at the University of Oregon. And we worked closely with Work and Families Party canvassers who were interviewing people and had the generous support of UFCW to make this thing happen. The issue that we're focused on here is the rise and really rapid expansion of irregular scheduling. Now, irregular scheduling refers to a whole set of practices that's especially happening in retail and hospitality and healthcare, but really a number of industries beyond that as well.
And what and fast food.
Fast food, hugely.
Hugely.
Food service. And it's providing people very short notice of their work schedules, sometimes less than 24 hours, making frequent changes in the work schedules, scheduling people for really variable hours from week to week. One week you might have 8, another 30, implementing really different start times. So you might start at 4 in the afternoon or 4 in the morning on different days. You might close late and open early. You might be sent home early without pay. You have to be on call. You may or may not be called into work. You get no pay if you're not called in. Some people arrive at work and are sent home without pay.
That's amazing. You could take a bus for 2 hours in this city if you live in where poor people are being pushed out to, making 3 connections, and arrive at work and they say, oh, sorry, we don't need you today.
Precisely what's happening.
And they don't even pay for the transportation.
They don't pay for the transportation.
No.
And you have to think about...
It is like criminal.
It's criminal. And it's not just transportation, which is a huge already investment of time, as you say, and money, but it's people's child care. They are having to arrange care for their children on this sort of last-minute basis. They can't have their kids in regular child care, so it's the people that they're getting help from are also on an irregular and last-minute schedule, and it means they lose access to the highest quality child care, which has proven to really make incredible differences in kids' school outcomes and future life prospects.
So,
there are all these kinds of things. They have to have open availability.
Open availability means you can't take a second job.
You cannot take a second
because
job.
Because if you tell them, sorry, I have something to do or something that's important, or I have to go to the doctor, they may say, well, next week you might not get as much time. Or any of the myriad punishments that low-level managers can inflict on people who are not completely subservient.
And that's exactly what Oregon's are reporting. That is exactly it. They are in these jobs then that may take them down to hours of only 8 a week or otherwise be nearly full-time. But if they say, look, I really need to work around my child care schedule, my medical schedule, my child custody schedule, my school schedule, a second job, no, people are being punished. They're getting terrible shifts and few hours or let go altogether. So it's a trap. It really is a trap.
And they can't belong to clubs that meet frequently. You can't be part of a bowling league because you have to stay open at all times.
Exactly. You can't do politics. You can't go to church. You can't make your kids' parent-teacher conferences. You cannot schedule medical care or family vacations. You can't even plan a family barbecue. Is what we're being told.
You talked about one woman, one of the interviews of the woman that was published in your study. She was a devoted churchgoer.
Right.
And she said, I'll work anytime you want me to, late at night, I'll open, I'll close, I'll do as many hours as you want, but on Sunday mornings I have to go to church.
Right.
And what happened to her?
Yeah, she started to be punished. She had her hours cut, and the manager refused not to schedule her for Sundays. Exactly as you said. She said she would work any regular schedule, Monday through Saturday, any shift. No. If she wouldn't commit to working Sundays, forget it. And he continued to schedule her for Sundays.
Well, think of it from the point of view of the manager, who is not paid very much more than the people and can also be cashiered very rapidly, right? Because there are other people who want these jobs of $2 more per hour than the minimum wage. From their point of view, if you get a lot of people, and one says, I can't work this hour, one says, I can't do that hour, it's much more complicated on the computer and all of the rest. And furthermore, they don't like being limited somehow. I mean, these poor people who are in the managerial things, and especially in fast foods, which is really low paid, and where they can hire managers very rapidly from the current staff. You know, somebody will take that
job,
which is, I think, the way they do it mostly.
Well, Bill, you really hit it with talking about the complexity of the computers, because a lot of this has emerged with new scheduling software that people are using. When you read the reviews of it, quite complex, difficult to manage, and turns out they treat labor then as just-in-time inventory, just like you would a soybean. I only want to store a soybean in my shed if I know I'm going to use it in the next hour. So they're treating labor like that, that we'll just pull it in exactly when we want it. But this software is not very good, or it's very challenging to make work well. So that people are being scheduled with this software, but the schedules they're getting are much more variable than consumer demand. I mean, the idea is, well, we only want to schedule people when we know there'll be people coming into the store. So if the weather's bad or something goes on, we want to be able to adjust quickly. But they're adjusting far more variably than is true for their business.
Well, that may be, but even if the software was perfect, it would make it even worse, it seems to me, because they could get rid of people even much more easily if they were rational, if they were completely rational.
Well, I have to disagree with you there partly, because the software is producing worse schedules than necessary, even if you want to meet the flow of demand. Yeah. The flow of business is really much more steady than the schedules. I do agree with you on the other point. I mean, in one way, what they're doing, they are shifting the risk of business on to the lowest paid people with the least ability to organize that business. So the risk of business is, oh, it might snow one day and, you know, only half the people are going to make it in. Well, that's a risk you take as a business owner. We talk about the return to capital is for bearing risk, and you have to have responsibility for your management. But your lowest paid employees, many of whom are earning so little that they are definitely supported by EITC, they are far more likely to be on food stamps than the labor force in general, but they are just, if not more likely to have kids at home, are bearing that risk without ability then to change their situation by taking a second job or get further training. Yeah.
This is Bill Resnick for the Omo Variety Hour. I'm talking to Mary King, emerita professor of economics at Portland State, who is still extremely active in progressive organizations and doing research. We're talking about her latest co-authored research, The Impact on Oregonians of the Rise of Irregular Scheduling. It's also the impact across the United States. And we've been talking about the terrible position that these low-paid people who have virtually no power and are being forced to work whatever hours the managers, using computer technology that's not very good, ask them to work. And sometimes come to work and then are sent home to take the two-hour bus ride back without any compensation if the computer made a slight mistake about almost anything. Anyway, Mary, let's talk about it, though, from the point of view of these companies.
Right.
It's not that every company boss is utterly cruel and merciless and just wants to destroy people and destroy their families and make life bad for them. They, of course, have their own therapy bills for their kids and the yacht bill and the people who run the yacht and all the rest of it. I mean, they have a lot of expenses. But even if they were these kinds of, there's always a few of them who are skinflints and who live in a little apartment somewhere and just accumulate vast amounts of money. I mean, there must be one at least like that. In any event, even if they weren't that, have huge these huge compensation states, they'll be cashiered if they don't make as much money as the next company down, especially in fast food that's really competitive. There's a different form of exploitations, actually. They have to show these huge profits, or they get fired. The CEOs who don't show at least average prices just get axed by Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Who basically run these firms, and they only last for about 5 years, so they want to clean up. They have to clean up. This is for them, and to just keep a job. They are forced to use this system, but system capitalism is just more cruel than almost anywhere else on this planet to low-wage workers because of the high technology and because of the ease of doing these things and because they basically dominate the state. They dominate government everywhere. Let's talk about the statutory basis. How do they get away with things like this? Of people being called to come to work in a regular work and then being told, go home.
Yeah, let me say two things, Bill. One is you're absolutely right that an unchecked market economy will create that kind of discipline and pressure on the low-level managers, middle managers, even upper managers to make the most money possible because it's a capitalism is a competitive system. It's not competitive in the way that they teach you in the Econ 1 textbooks, you know, where the firms don't have power. The firms have a lot of power, but they're using that power to compete with each other for access to capital, and they have to show the highest returns possible. So that is absolutely the case. And we see that in not only emerging in these irregular schedules, but the degree to which firms are now shedding regular workers. So even the wealthiest, most prosperous companies, the big ones, the most monopolized, Bank of America, people like that are said to have 20 to 50% of their workforce effectively outsourced, working as contractors, and then those contractors compete like crazy with each other. So that is absolutely
and
right.
They can be fired. They don't get benefits. These contractors, they're all independent contractors, and they're doing that at also even lower levels, hiring people without any benefits at all. Of course, they get out of benefits in these really low-wage places just by keeping people at under 30 hours a week, and then benefits don't
right.
apply, whatever. A lot of companies don't even have any benefits at all. And, of course, the universities, for another reason, there's very few people now hired, or a very small percentage of people are hired for a regular 40-hour week with benefits and any sense of security at all.
No, that's absolutely true. And Harvard economists showed that of the job growth in the last 10 years, more than all of it was in this temporary and contingent. But we do need to get to solutions, because the only way. The market is not going to fix this. The companies are not going to fix this. It takes regulation. And you're absolutely right that the companies and the wealthy have far too much power over our governments. But people have figured out strategies. One on the irregular scheduling specifically was passed by San Francisco and implemented in 2014. And they have put standards. You need to give people so many hours. They need to have so much notice of their schedule. They need to be able to have input in their schedule. You need to pay them more if you cut their hours late or ask them late in with little notice to work fewer or more hours. So there are policy practices out there. It's been very successfully working in San Francisco. Seattle has passed something similar, which is now going into effect just in July. And
how about Portland?
The city of Portland, actually, under Steve Novick's leadership, passed a strong resolution, but they are not able to. They are preempted by the state at passing this kind of legislation. And so the action is all at the state. And there is a bill right now in the legislature that people should be pushing their legislators on. It's being carried, championed by Michael Dembrow and actually some of our other Portland legislators, but it is being hung up. It's not been passed. And the people who are pushing it have now just gone to a potential for a ballot referendum there, starting to gather signatures saying, if we cannot count on the legislature to do such basic labor protections as this we're going to have to go to a... Yes, exactly. Yeah. And you also made the point, which I didn't address earlier, but is absolutely correct, that our labor law was not written to cover this contingency because the assumption that schedules would be regular was so prevalent that it's not mentioned in our labor law and it's not addressed in our big data sets. We don't have good data because people assume regular schedules, which is why we had to go to doing our own study by interviewing with people on the street and backing it up with census data on, okay, what are the populations like in these occupations where people are reporting these terrible conditions?
What are the numbers here? What percentage of the workforce now is irregularly scheduled? Contract workers, independent contractors, and irregular workers like in retail and fast food and lots of other things, hospitals everywhere, universities.
Well, it's a high proportion, as you point out. I mean, as I was mentioning, they're saying 20 to 50% of the total workforce is outsourced at some of our biggest operations. The growth in the U.S. labor force of alternative workers, people in the gig economy, independent contractors, vendors, things like that, and when you are up to 15%, they say that one in six people in the country have very little notice of their schedule, sometimes 24 hours. So these different measures are capturing different things. But it's a high proportion. As you point out, the universities, I found myself testifying on a panel for the Workers' Rights Board, actually, about contingent workers being hired by the city, a public employer that should be setting the standards, and realizing I work at the public university where we do the exact same thing.
Yeah, they're called...
Adjunct faculty. Exactly.
Yeah. And there are more and more of them, yes.
Yes.
Who are earning not much, probably less than the minimum wage, if you consider all the time they spend in grading papers and all of the rest of it that is all uncompensated.
Oh, absolutely. And then the commute time running from one place to another.
The answer, of course, is to raise wages greatly and make sure that people have benefits like medical care and there's child care and that they have regular work in all of the things that have to be done in this society. Tell us why training is an absurd response. I mean, training and education, of course, are all good in some ways, but it's not a response to poverty and lack of work.
No. I mean, all work has dignity. These are jobs that need to be done. They're a huge and growing part of our economy. They are not jobs taken by people who are in their teens who will soon go on to become engineers as soon as they go to college. These are real jobs. It's important work, and we need it. We depend on it. I mean, home health care workers are a giant group who are affected by this kind of irregular scheduling. So just as you say, we need two things especially. We need to improve our labor legislation so that we require employers to pay living wages and provide regular schedules with notice that deal with all of the employees' needs to manage their own family and lives. And we need to go back and look at what we've allowed to happen for the laws regulating union organizing, because collective bargaining can take on these sort of issues, but we have made it so difficult. We have raised so many legal obstacles to union organizing in this country that has become a very difficult road.
I want to disagree about the we.
Well, we. Correct. That we weren't part of that. We didn't get consulted. You are right.
We tried not to have that. But there's a new insurgency going on in America, in this country now, and all over the world. There's lots of reasons for hope that things will radically change and have to radically change in the near future. Anyway, that's my faith. How about you, Mary?
No, you're right. I am absolutely... I think Bernie Sanders' campaign showed it here in town. Jeremy Corbyn's effective win with a very strong labor manifesto in Britain showed the interest, especially of younger Britons, in having a very different economy and world.
Mary King, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you, Bill. It's always a pleasure.
Bit in and stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping, out on the streets the traffic starts jumping, with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5.